opinion.
You're listening to Radio Sputnik. I'm Ivan Ponriv, and I'm now being joined on the phone by a public figure and publicist, Avigdor Askin. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Askin. And as always, we'll discuss and comment on some of the stories making the news headlines this week. Now, of course, we'll start with the shaky ceasefire. Ceasefire agreement, rather, reached by the Normandy Four on February the 12th. Normandy Four comprises Ukraine, Russia, France and Germany. Now, they reached the agreements in Minsk, the capital of Belarus. We know that after that there were fierce clashes between independence seekers and Kiev troops in the town of Debaltseve, sitting right in between Lugansk and Donbass, connecting the capitals of the two self-proclaimed republics. Now, there's a lot of debate, obviously, going on around the Minsk agreements, whether the peace will last, really. Now, Hillary Clinton was quoted by the London mayor as saying that the Europeans were being too wimpy in dealing with Putin. Now, question to Mr. Avigdor, can we see it as an attempt to undermine the Minsk Accords?
I don't think so, really. I suppose that Washington just wants to rather see where the wind will blow. And there's so many unexpected outbursts of violence that happen in Ukraine from time to time, it's impossible to control it, really. And I don't think that we should blame Washington for everything which is going on there. I would rather express certain deep concern which I have about the Minsk Accords and general mood there, that, you know, with all the disrespect to different ways of behavior on this or that side, we have to admit that there was one side which adopted Nazi ideology, and this was Ukrainian side. You know, when they officially, the Ukrainian government announced that Bandera and Shukhevich, two Second World War criminals of the lowest and the worst type, by the way, Bandera was also in a philosopher, his ideology of genocide was introduced into Ukrainian society back then, and we see the implementation of this ideology when they just shoot at peaceful people living in Donetsk, Lugansk, when Ukrainian army really indiscriminately tried to kill civilians. And this was not just a mistake made by a certain commander or by the president of Ukraine. This was a policy of Bandera and Shukhevich, which they adopted. So, you know, after Second World War, there was such a campaign as a denazification of Germany. Everybody understood, including Mr. Churchill and the U.S. President Roosevelt and the Soviets as well, that there is a need to get rid of this ideology. Now, other ideologies can be better, worse. They can be more democratic. They can be sometimes oppressive, sometimes very unpleasant, like the Soviet regime at a certain time, or as certain regimes in Latin America. Now, but Nazism is signified as a special ideology which has no right to exist if we want to live, because this is an ideology of extermination, of death. And the fact that the Ukrainian side carries on with spreading the ideas of Bandera and Shukhevich, and that nobody cares about it, this makes me worried very much, because sooner or later there will be another outburst of violence. Without the broad agreement that there will be no way back to what happened 70 years ago, if we will not say again loudly, never again, this will come again in this or that way. Now in Ukrainian way, then we can face it somehow in the Baltic states, and then we can face it in Europe, because now is, you know, the problem with Muslim terrorism and with the Muslim immigration is huge, immense. I mean, it's terrible what's going on in Europe. And unfortunately, some of the people who are going to protest against all this will be neo-Nazi forces. They can gain, an extreme right can gain from these problems that the European nations fail. And if we will not raise our voices in Ukraine now, so the spread of the neo-Nazi radicalism can be such that we will regret our silence today. Really so.
I see. What? How can Kyiv, you think, be persuaded to drop the current policies you've just spoken of?
You know, at the beginning of Gorbachev's rule, there were two magic words, glasnost and perestroika. So number one is glasnost. We have to talk about it. We have to put it on the table. The European nations, the United States, they have to admit that there is nothing can be said about Ukrainian practices of Nazi ideology, but this is a horrible, horrible mistake made by the Ukrainian president, the Ukrainian prime minister now. They have to stop it. They have to stop it. And I don't think there should be any disagreement here between Russians, English, Americans. All of them were not just partners, but they were nations like brothers fighting the Nazis together. And now we are going to celebrate the victory, the 70th victory over the Nazi regime. And instead of doing it together, instead of joining hands, you know, we have some disagreements. This is very unfortunate. This allows our enemies, and the enemies can come from the side of ISIS, they can come from the side of the neo-Nazis, who hate America as well, by the way. And instead, you know, we keep quarreling among ourselves, and the darkest representatives of the world evil are becoming stronger and be getting support on the level of government. This is the most dangerous thing. Opinion.
Now, speaking of other volatile regions, and moving on to Middle East, if we may, radio commentator and head of the Tea Party, Glenn Beck, who actually made a very strong statement against Hillary Clinton, mentioned earlier on, and her political circle, accusing them of arrogance. Now, he also said that World War II is picking up. We are on the brink of it. Commenting on the slaughter of the Coptic Christians in Libya, obviously, this Islamic State group beheaded 21 of them last Sunday, I believe, and the Egyptian Air Force bombed Islamic State bases in Libya on Monday, and there was even some pronouncements from Qatar. Qatar has recalled its ambassador from Egypt following a row about airstrikes on the Islamic State targets in Libya, and a foreign ministry official said it was prompted by comments made by Egypt's delegates to the Arab League, actually, who accused Qatar of supporting terrorism. What will be your comment on the situation around what's happening in Egypt, Libya, and in the Middle East as such at the moment regarding the IS threat?
Now, I have to send Mr. Glenn back to the history of the Second World War and the First World War. And there are certain procedures which take place when nations get engaged in the world war. So we don't see it today yet. I think it's too early to scream the wolf. I mean, there's no wolf yet, but it's coming. But what's very, very significant in his words, I think he said it's very, very put in a very wise way. But having criticized Hillary Clinton, he brings a very, very, you know, true picture of what happened in the Middle East, American involvement in Syria, especially in Libya. America moved there to bring peace and stability. Well, instead of peace and stability, look what's going on there now. The country is divided into pieces, and there's no control, and Christian population is getting slaughtered by the beasts of ISIS. This is on the one hand. Now, Egypt was also betrayed by the United States government, and it's not because of the will of the people of Egypt that today there is certain stability, and there is a normal and cooperative government which can cooperate both with Russia, with the United States, and with the European community, and to keep certain level of human rights there, which we wouldn't see if, God forbid, the Muslim Brotherhood would finally take over. So the situation is there is a bloodshed. There is a potential for this bloodshed to be tripled and more. And Glenn Beck said that this is the outcome of our arrogance. Very, very, very deep thought, you know, because really today we see that many American politicians have this feeling that they can do anything they want. And whatever they do will be justified by the very fact that they are American, freedom-loving people. But it's not so. You have to first remember that if you go somewhere to install peace, go there with a Bible and not with a cynical smile, that you are allowed to do whatever you want. Now, what this feeling that whatever we want, we will do, and this will be the right thing to do, it doesn't work. And he was very humble. Glenn was very soft-spoken, humble, and I think wise. And I wish there will be more Americans who will listen to him. By the way, it's not only his view that America has to be more humble and instead of these aggressive attempts to impose American lifestyle somewhere in Yemen or in Iran or in Iraq, but instead of being really a peaceful country, which will be appreciated not just by the neighbors, by the whole world, because you know that American nation has developed such standards of living that many people want to live in America and not vice versa. But sure. When it comes to American policies abroad, you will find that there will be very few people who are sympathetic towards America, analyzing what happened in the Middle East, for example. And then you have to understand why Israel is so cautious today dealing with the Obama administration on Iran.
Yes.
It's not because of any kind of fanaticism or any kind of indoctrination, but rather because of very sad practice and very sad experience.
Opinion. Indeed, Steve Forbes wrote in his editorial in which he compared Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, to Churchill of our time. He welcomes Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to Washington. Now, when is that going to take place? And I know that they'll be discussing the nuclear issue, Iran's nuclear issue, won't they?
Yeah, it's going to happen in a couple of weeks. Before the elections in Israel, but the timetable was set not by the Israeli Prime Minister, but obviously by the U.S. Congress and the U.S. Senate.
Mm.
And Netanyahu was invited there. And I mean, I don't understand the arguments against it. How can Netanyahu decline from going there if the U.S. congressmen and senators want to hear his voice and his concerns are genuine? And the editorial in Forbes, which, you know, Israel usually is not much spoiled by good press, whether it's in America or in England, not by editorials. But here we can see that some people in America more and more understand that the genuine concern about this whole movement in the Islamic world of terrorism, of non-recognition of any other culture but their own culture, by simply rejecting any other form of life rather than theirs. We're talking about, of course, tiny minority among the whole Muslim population, but this tiny minority creates a real threat to the world peace today. And if we will not take measures against them, meaning ISIS first, Hamas, whether it's Hezbollah, they can become a threat, really a third world war. And this is what actually Steve Forbes tells his readers. Listen to Netanyahu. People didn't want to listen to Churchill at a certain time, and they believed that peace with Nazi Germany is possible. But then, all of a sudden, they realized that Churchill was right. And if they would have listened to him earlier, maybe the war could be prevented. And this is what we have to talk now, how to prevent the war. Glenn Beck knocks on our door saying, well, it's already there. Let's be realistic and say not yet, but by saying not yet, we have to go and say, okay, so let's see how we prevent it from coming.
Exactly, and obviously, if not World War III, there's still a lot of anti-Semitic sentiment coming from the Muslim community, especially from Europe. Now, I know that Prime Minister of Israel also called upon European Jews to come back to Israel, and we indeed know that in Tel Aviv there's a huge community of French Jews, mostly living in Sderot Rothschild, and his words were enhanced, actually, Benjamin Netanyahu's words were enhanced by the report about an Israeli journalist who walked a few hours in Paris wearing the traditional Jewish skullcap and having been actually abused and insulted by the Arab population. However, Norwegian Muslims are ready to defend the synagogue in Oslo. What is the feeling in the Jewish communities now in Europe?
You know, I think that what happened in Oslo, that the Muslim population offered this type of human demonstration of solidarity is wonderful, and I believe that the vast majority of European Muslims are like them. However, you don't need more than a few small groups which are supported morally by others, unfortunately, like in the case of England and in France, we know that there is a lot of support for radical Islamism from those who will never touch a gun themselves, but feel uncomfortable in Europe and prefer to have Sharia law in Europe and not democracy and not the laws which were based on European philosophy and on Greek tradition. So there are many people today of Jewish origin in Europe who are attacked just because they're Jews. And what happened in Denmark and in France in two cases, they were killed just because they were Jewish. No connection to any cartoons or any other controversial ways of behavior. So, yes, the people are listening to Netanyahu. Some say, well, why are you telling us now? I mean, after the tragic events, and Netanyahu will probably answer to them, the truth is that Jews love Israel, but they go to Israel when real trouble comes. This we know from our history. And the trouble is coming, knocking their doors, and more of them are coming to Israel. Thanks God, it's not 3-4 hours flight, comfortable flight. So they will come. They will come.
Well, thank you very much. That's all we've got time for, I'm afraid. On the line with me was public figure and publicist Avigdor Askin, and we've been discussing and commenting on some of the stories making the news headlines this week. Thank you very much for your time and for your answers, Mr. Askin.
Well, thank you very, very much.
That's it. Opinion.